Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Mikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors Illinois about their books. Central.
My guest is Colin Woodard. He's been a guest on this show before, and he's out with a new book called Union, The Struggle to Forge the Story of the United States Nationhood. It is available now wherever your fine books are sold, and it's an absolute great deep dive into this whole idea of national identity, cultural identity, very, very timely topic. Colin, as I read the book, I kept thinking to myself, I've viscerally known this for some time, that there is this regional identity in the United States. I live here in the Midwest, and Midwestern politicians always say, well, those are New York values, or that's a Hollywood culture, or those types of things. And so I guess viscerally we know this, so why is this such an elusive thing for us to grasp, that the whole idea of national identity is sort of a myth?
Yeah, well, we've always had a hard time because our country is fundamentally been divided from the beginning. One of my previous books, American Nations, showed how we've not ever been one America, but several, with the differences boiling back to the original clusters of English and French and Dutch and Spanish colonies that were on the southern and eastern rims of what's now the United States, and each of which settled its own strip or tier of the United States in the subsequent decades. And there were enormous differences between them in ethnography and religion and economic and cultural characteristics. So my big question, and I think a lot of people are asking this question now, is what has held us together all this time? What's our national story, you know, the one that tells us what the United States is and where it came from and what its purpose is and who belongs? And so Union is the story of who created this national story, or in fact rival stories, and when, and looking for lessons as to how it can perhaps rejuvenate our federation and our shared sense of purpose today.
Where do you look for the historical record for this? Is this newspapers? Is this history books? Where do you start?
Yeah, well, almost anywhere one can dig. So yes, I mean, going back to ultimately to newspapers and speeches and books from the time period and commentary, you know, the equivalent of you know, television and the internet and social media back in those time periods, where ideas were fought over and exchanged and broadcast and disseminated. But to get to those things, as with any of my research, you sort of start, you know, with books that have been written about aspects of the topic, and then you see what their sources are, and that eventually gets you back into the scholarly, you know, research articles and different academic journals, and you work your way back and figure out from them where the original letters that people wrote were, and the key figures, and where the actual documents are, that sometimes you have to go to an archive and actually look at the original, you know, handwritten document, because it doesn't exist anywhere else. So it's a combination of all of those things, back to original sources and, you know, newspapers and things published in the time period, and things and building blocks that others in centuries that have gone by have put together.
George Bancroft is a character that I had heard the name, but I'll be darned if I could have told you what he was about or even when he lived before I read your book. So can you kind of explain where he fits into this picture, because he was pivotal?
Yeah, he was a huge figure because he was essentially the first person to package a story of what the United States was supposed to be. And this was done in the 1830s, I mean, a generation or two after the Revolution. And that's no accident, because as the revolutionary generation was dying, the country suddenly was asking itself what holds us together. The differences between, you know, the North and the South, in quotes, were obviously growing, and we were starting to head in the events that would eventually lead to a civil war. And people realized, we need an answer as to what the United States is. I understand if I'm a Massachusettsian or a South Carolinian, but what does it mean to be a person in the United States? And Bancroft came forward and did that. He was a historian, and in fact, the most famous American historian of the 19th century. He's largely forgotten today, but he wrote this epic 10-volume history over, you know, 7 decades it took him to write it, of the United States, that put forward this vision that we were a country tasked by providence and perhaps by God to carry forth human freedom to a new level, and that we were dedicated to ideals, and that was what held us together. The ideals in the start of the Declaration of Independence about humans' fundamental and inalienable rights and fundamental equality and the importance of self-government, and that was sort of universally what held us together, made us an exceptional nation. You know, it had all kinds of hubris and all kinds of potential pitfalls in having a story like that, but that was the big primary story. And Bancroft, while forgotten, wasn't just a historian. He actually practiced politics and furthered the history itself. He served as Secretary of War and Secretary of the Navy under the Polk administration when we were expanding into Texas and annexing California. He's the person who founded the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis, and he served later as our ambassadors to London and Berlin at critical points in our history. So he was a statesman and an actor, as well as a famous historian, and became one of the most sort of important and celebrated figures of his time period. He's the one that Congress asked to give the official eulogy for Andrew Jackson when he died, and for Abraham Lincoln, and gave him, unique among all civilians, privileges to sit on the Senate floor anytime he liked. So he was a very special figure in his era.
When you say that at the time people were asking what holds us together, I guess I'm putting myself in the light of 21st century. I can't imagine a lot of people caring at this point as to what holds us together, other than people who, you know, the intellectuals, the professor types, the research types. Was this something that was a nationwide idea that people were caring about, or was it mostly the intellectual class that cared?
Well, the intellectual class was the one engaging with the answers, but yeah, I think people cared. And in fact, I think people care now, even if they don't talk about it in those terms. I mean, people are kind of wondering. We have red states and blue. We've got MAGA and Black Lives Matter. We have these fundamental disagreements over, you know, who is American? What are our values? Over, you know, monuments and flags and symbols from our past that have spilled over onto the streets today. So in essence, those are questions about, you know, what if there are these strong differences, and a lot of them even graft to geographic differences, how do we hold ourselves together, and how did we so in the past? And people in the 1830s and 1840s, there was that broad sense as well. We'd won the War of 1812, or at least not been invaded by Britain, and there were all of these differences that were pushing the country's regions apart. But there wasn't a good answer as to what would hold it together. Why should there be a United States? Why should we have a central government? What do we share in common? And that was out there in the, you know, sort of in the public and in the spirit and the atmosphere of the times, and these intellectuals responded to it to deliver answers.
I'm chatting with Colin Woodard about his new book, Union, The Struggle to Forge the Story of United States Nationhood. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. I find it interesting, Colin, that you identify really the 1830s, excuse me, with the way that people started to think about a national identity, especially with George Bancroft. But so, I mean, thinking back to our founding, though, with the Declaration of Independence, how important was that document as far as establishing any type of national identity?
I mean, that was the glove that was thrown down, right? It created the United States and its fundamental argument for why it was going to be independent from the British Empire and what its founding values were. And everything else follows from there. But after that, the Declaration was put forward, and then we fought the Revolution, and then we had a couple of constitutions, the Articles of Confederation and then the 1789 Constitution. There were still big questions about what it meant. There was an argument over the Declaration of Independence itself, a largely regional argument about whether Jefferson's assertion that humans were fundamentally born equal and had certain inalienable rights, that was highly contentious at a regional level when a large portion of the country was built on the assumption of human inequality, that some people were incapable of self-government and, in fact, should be enslaved, and that a republic would be built upon that. Those are contradictory ideas. And you're right that that is the document and the thing that people ended up using as a touchstone in their arguments. But there was not broad agreement about whether or not that was the fundamental purpose and task of the United States. The book talks about the struggle to create a story of United States nationhood. The struggle was over those things.
As you move into the second half of the 19th century, there's slavery and Reconstruction going on, but at the same time, American expansion toward the West. And so how did those two competing, maybe not necessarily competing, but at least co-taminant, I think that's the word, events bring forth thought by various people, including a couple of people I'd never heard of, William Gilmore Sims and Frederick Douglass I'd heard of, obviously.
Yeah, well, as the after the Civil War, as the country was expanding into the far West beyond the Midwest, there was a debate going on in the halls of power and over exactly which vision was going to win out. You know, you had a civil war that was fought over whether or not we were devoted to those ideals in the preamble to the Declaration of Independence that we were just talking about, the ones that Abraham Lincoln had reasserted at the Gettysburg Address. Or whether we were actually based on inequality, and that you had, you know, that you would have racial inequality, that the 14th and 15th Amendments were incorrect, and that battle was going on the whole time that we were also expanding into the far west. But one really interesting thing that came out of it was somebody from the Midwest. You know, a lot of the discussion had been between people at East Coast institutions in the South and in the North. But then you had Frederick Jackson Turner, a native of what had been the Wisconsin frontier when he was a child, who was at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, who came up with a different answer, that fundamentally what made us all Americans was the experience and the environment of the trans-Appalachian West, of the, today's Midwest and interior West, and that those conditions, when you were so far and remote from the European past and legacy and could be out at sort of in an Eden and be new people, that had made and shaped the American character to make us, you know, good Republicans, you know, the self-government and self-reliance and neighborliness and a sort of a egalitarian streak in us all. He had doubts about that later as he started going into his research and realizing that the differences between the different settlement streams, the northern tier that had originated in New England and the next tier down that had originated in Pennsylvania and the next one after that that had originated in the Appalachian backcountry and spread into the, you know, southern parts of Ohio and Indiana and Illinois, that all of those places, oddly enough, those settlement streams, the people seemed to react to this new environment in the West differently. So he had his own doubts, but the grip of the idea of the frontier thesis and the frontier being what had shaped Americans stuck with the country for a half century, and echoes of it are still with us today.
And then the presidency of Woodrow Wilson played a huge role in continuing this into the 20th century, right?
Massive. So Wilson was the first, you know, he was deep Southern raised and was the son of a prominent, perhaps the most prominent preacher in the Confederate Presbyterian Church, who had been a white supremacist of of the highest order. And Woodrow Wilson, in his presidency, he basically brought forward this ethno-nationalist idea, this idea of inequality and essentially what we would call white supremacy, into the White House and into the federal government. A Union government that had won the Civil War, he segregated the post office and government offices. There was this Hollywood blockbuster film that spread across the country, the first Hollywood blockbuster, The Birth of a Nation, which was celebrating the Ku Klux Klan's reign of terror against African Americans in the South to stop them from being engaged in politics. They were the heroes of this film. And the film was so controversial, there were massive protests against it outside movie theaters across the country. And municipal and state governments were considering censoring or banning the film. At that time, the First Amendment didn't cover films, so you could actually do that, and people did. And Woodrow Wilson came and rescued it by showing it in the White House, and then the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court showed it to the rest of the Supreme Court justices and members of Congress the next day. He'd been a member of the Ku Klux Klan himself, and so loved the film. So what I'm saying is that era, this ethno-nationalist vision, this white supremacist vision, actually was dominant and was the sort of consensus view north and south in the 1910s and 1920s. And while it was sort of overturned and vanquished in the middle of the 20th century, elements are still with us today, and this battle still continues.
Just absolutely fascinating work that you've put together here. The book is Union, The Struggle to Forge the Story of United States Nationhood. The book's available by everywhere your books are sold. Colin Woodard, just another fantastic offering, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thanks so much for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Good morning.